Hey, you guys, just wanted to welcome you once again to Salt Company, and a lot of you, it's probably your first time. Maybe you showed up because someone gave you a flyer, or we're doing some surveys, and told you we were talking about this topic that Lance already mentioned earlier, and that Justin so boldly sang out, "You gotta fight for your right to party." You know, this is interesting because this is kind of, you know, stirred up a little bit of controversy as we've talked to different people about our topic tonight. It's called Jesus the Drunk. And basically, if you're new to Salt Company, we try to address like real life issues with the Bible, and we talk about Christianity in a way that hopefully it relates to your life. So we did these surveys, three questions. If Jesus asked to go with you on your spring break trip, what would you tell him? And second question was, in the Bible, why do you think they called Jesus a drunk? And the third one is, to you, who is Jesus, and do you think his teachings are relevant to college students? And it's interesting, the first question, you know, if Jesus said, "Hey, can I go with you on your spring break trip," what would you tell him? Here's some of the responses. One guy said, "Heck yeah. Can you take us somewhere miraculous? Like, forget Daytona Beach, man. We want to go to Mars or something." One guy summed it up. He said he wouldn't want to go with us. We do bad things. You know, if Jesus knew what we were all about on spring break, he definitely would not want to go with us. And most people, interestingly, reluctantly said yes. But it was more a yes out of pity and feeling bad for not letting God tag along. You know, it's like, sure, I guess he could come along. One person actually said that they thought that they would get more studying accomplished if Jesus came along with them. So they're like, sure, you know. He'll probably be going to bed early and getting up and telling me to study and stuff, so that may be good. For the second question was, in the Bible, why do you think people called Jesus, why did they call him a drunk? For a lot of people, frankly, this was new information. Most people who, and even a lot of the people who claimed to know Jesus or be Christians, they didn't know that was in the Bible, that they accused him of being a drunk. So that'll be good. We're addressing that here in a second. And the third one, that to you, who is Jesus, and do you think his teachings are relevant to college students? In general, people seem to think that his teachings were relevant, but that he was just a good teacher and that you had to kind of take his teachings with a grain of salt. So many saw Jesus as kind of this famous hippie who would have fit well here in Iowa City, listening to the Avett Brothers on his iPod and just kind of hanging out, having a heart for the homeless and, you know, throwing some money to poor people and stuff like that. But that he loved the poor. One girl said, she said, quote, "I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I'm over the whole Jesus thing." One guy said, I read the New Testament on a regular basis, but I'm not a follower of Christ. And I asked him why, and he said, he's an anthropology major, and he said, because it's the most important book in the history of the world. So very interesting to see how people perceive Jesus. So I think if we could combine the results of just canvassing this campus and getting their opinions, I guess we could say this about the typical University of Iowa student and their perception of Jesus would go something like this. He wouldn't really want to hang out with me because I do bad things. He's probably pretty boring. You know, he's going to help me get better grades and study and constantly be like right there telling me what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm not. He's the killjoy nun that I remember from my Catholic school, or he's this well-intentioned hippie who eats organic and local food and, you know, listens to hipster music and stuff. That's pretty much, I think, would summarize basically what people, how they view Jesus. Now, tonight, we're not going to answer every question that you have about Jesus in the Bible. We're not going to answer, you know, definitively, is he God? Is he the only way to heaven? How did they fit all those animals on the ark anyway? And just stuff like that. But we are going to answer this question. And actually, I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to think about it. And it kind of frames in our discussion tonight, and it's this. Kind of based on the surveys here. Who or what have most people rejected? Have they rejected Jesus? Or have they rejected religion? Or some other idea that they have about Jesus? So who or what have people rejected? That's the question I want to address tonight. Now, something happened to me a couple years ago. I was at the skate park, and this kid came with some of his buddies, and I happened to know this kid, and he was dropping in on the quarter pipe, and he just slammed. He was new to the park, not used to transitions, and this kid slammed and just totally shattered his arm. I mean, his arm just like snapped in half, and it was one of those gnarly things where, you know, you come over and the kid's like, his hand is like over here, and his arm is just, sorry. It was bad. The thing that made it worse was this kid had kind of snuck out of the house and didn't tell his parents where he was going. And so I went over, and you know, the ambulance came and the medics there, and you know, get mom and dad on the phone, and it's like, you're where? What happened? One of those moments. Now let me just read into, and I'm gonna make a portrayal of this kid's parents that aren't necessarily true, but I wanna use this for the sake of this illustration here. Imagine being that boy. And obviously you're freaked out because you know you deserve to be punished. You know what you did was wrong. And you know it's because of what you did that you're laying there with a mangled arm, okay? You know all that to be true. But right now these medics come over and they're compassionate. And they know exactly what they're doing. And they know, and they're putting your arm back, and they're filling up this air, sort of air cast, and they're putting you on a stretcher, and they're just, don't worry, it's going to be all right. We're going to get you through this. It's going to heal up. You're going to be fine. Now imagine his parents on speakerphone or FaceTime, and they're saying, what are you doing? What, you deserve this to happen. I mean, didn't we tell you not to leave the house? And can you imagine the sort of that condemning voice of the parent who, it's, I mean, technically they're right, aren't they? I mean, the boy did sort of have it coming because he disobeyed. But you have those two people over you, and you're that little boy, and you're watching the medic trying to take care of you and meet your needs. And then you're listening to this sort of angry father. So, which one is Jesus? That's my question to you. Because if in your mind, based on your experiences and what you perceive to be true about the Bible and Jesus, Jesus just might be, God just might be that angry parent over the top of you, condemning you. Or he may be the medic who came to fix you. So depending on your perception of Jesus, of course, if he's just the angry father, forget that, dude. Fight for your right to party, man, because, I mean, eat and drink for tomorrow we die. I mean, why would you not do that? Okay, so what we want to address tonight is sort of the perception of Jesus based on those surveys. Now, you know, studying philosophy in college, I know that one of the temptations that I have, and you guys, maybe you're an English major or studying philosophy or something, it's always easier to learn about someone like Immanuel Kant or John Locke or, you know, some famous author based on what other people say about them, rather than, you know, if you're going to learn about Dostoevsky, it might be easier to just read a bunch of people who have read him and can kind of give you the Cliff Notes version, right? And so that's what a lot of people do with Christianity, with Jesus. But what we want to do tonight is we want to hear it from the horse's mouth. And so many of you, you may not have a Bible, so I'm just going to read it, and it's actually going to come up on the screens. But we're in Matthew, and it's the first book of the New Testament. It's about the life of Jesus from an eyewitness account. This man, Matthew, who saw Jesus up close and personal. And in Matthew chapter 11, I want to start in verse 16. And he says this, "To what can I compare this generation? They are like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling out to others, 'We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn.' For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'Here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' But wisdom is proved right by her actions." Now, this is a little mysterious passage to many of you, and especially if you're new to the Bible, this might not make sense. So I'm just going to walk through it and kind of explain what's going on here, okay? So he begins with this question, what can I compare this generation to? And he says they're like little children outside playing this game. And they're calling out to each other, "We played the flute and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge and you did not mourn." What's going on here? What Jesus is saying is, he's like, the people of this generation, very similar to the people of our generation, they're like a bunch of little kids out on the playground. And one of them wants to play this game and they start playing it. And the other one says, "No, that's stupid. I don't want to play that game." And so they play this other game. And he's saying, like children who, no matter what you do, they can never be happy. I mean, many of you will have kids someday, and you'll know this. And some of you have nephews and nieces, and you know that one thing that doesn't help a kid is to just give them sugar, to give them whatever the heck they want, whenever they want, right? Because that doesn't solve the problem. Because kids, whatever you do, they'll never be happy, right? And so that's kind of what Jesus is saying about this generation. Now, in what way are they like this? He says, verse 18, here's what happened. He says, "For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon." Okay, the greater context here, and for the sake of time, we're not going to read the whole chapter. If you want to do that, that'd be good to go home tonight and just read all of chapter 11. You can read the whole book of Matthew. That'd be good, especially if you're new to the Bible. It'd be a great place to start. But John, who's John? This guy named John the Baptist. John would go around, and he was a guy that came ahead of Jesus to prepare the way. He was actually related to Jesus. And John the Baptist came, and he came, as Jesus says, neither eating nor drinking. Now let me give you a little background to this story. There were a group of people, you know, God's chosen people. This group of people that we read about throughout the Old Testament, they're the Jews, okay? This Hebrew people, God's chosen people, and God was going to bless these people, and through him, he was going to make everyone aware of who he is, okay? Now, these people basically turned away from God, okay? His own people rejected him. What happened is they got so into the rules. If you read the Old Testament, this much of the Bible, it's filled with rules, 613 commands. Now, there were a lot of commands about what you could eat and what you couldn't eat, what you could drink and what you could not drink. And John came and he obeyed all those rules down to the T. He came neither eating nor drinking. In fact, in Luke 1:15, one of the other gospels, it says that no alcohol, no wine was ever to touch his lips. All right, so he's this extreme. He was an ascetic. The dude lived out in the desert. And so they accused him of having a demon. And this time, it was believed that demons lived out in the desert. And so you got this weird guy, John the Baptist, who's going to prepare the way for Jesus. And he comes neither eating nor drinking. And what do they say about him? They're like, he has a demon. He's crazy. Jesus turns it around and he says, verse 19, "The Son of Man came eating and drinking, And they say, here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. We come to the answer to the second question of that survey. Why did people in the Bible call Jesus a drunk? And so when we say tonight's topic is Jesus the drunk, we're not trying to be sacrilegious. What we're saying is people accused Jesus of being the town drunk. Why? Two reasons. Number one, he drank wine. It says here that John didn't come drinking, and so Jesus contrasts himself with John, who says, he says about himself, and I came eating and drinking. And they accuse me of being a glutton and a drunkard. This drunkard is the word for like drinking an excess of wine. And that's what Jesus was being accused of. One, because he drank, and number two, because he spent his time with people who also drank alcohol. He spent his time with prostitutes. He spent his time with women who slept around, who hooked up a lot. He spent his time with bad people, people who like to party on spring break. That's who Jesus spent his time with. And so guilt by association, right? That's who he spends time with. So he must be getting drunk. He must be doing the things that they do, living a sketchy life and all that. And so they accuse him in that way. So here's the main point that I want to make about what we read about Jesus. Here it is. And I think this is kind of the punchline for Matthew, the guy writing this. Jesus is a friend to messed up people. If you're here tonight and you feel like you're messed up, you're living a messed up, broken life, Matthew is saying, then you've come to the right place because Jesus is for you. Matthew is painting this picture of Jesus as the medic who's standing over you, and there you lay with a mangled arm, and Jesus is not thrown off. I mean, you don't want a medic who's freaked out, right? You don't want a medic who, this is the first time they've seen a broken arm. You want a medic who is calm, collected, and able to get in your world and understand where you're at, and help heal you. All right? And so Jesus stands over you as a medic who's willing to heal. That's the main point that the Bible wants to make, I think, through this passage. And so I ask you, what or who have you rejected? Jesus or religion? Now, Jesus is a friend of sinners, and he's obviously frustrated by these religious people. The context of this is, and what we're going to see here, if you read through this Gospel of Matthew, you're going to see Jesus had the hardest time hanging out with religious people. Why? Because these were people who, they didn't need to be fixed. They were self-righteous. They were okay without God. And so I want to ask a question. I think this is one of the most challenging things here. Because probably most of you in this room would claim to be a Christ follower, and some of you are totally following Jesus. You know, it's so hard to become more and more like Jesus without simultaneously, you know, becoming just a judgmental critic, a self-righteous religious person that just pushes people away from God. And Jesus had such a hard time with those people. And for some reason, I don't know how, Jesus was able to hang out with people who partied, who had sex a lot, And somehow, some way, they enjoyed being with him. Somehow they still wanted him to be with them on spring break trip. How is that possible? You know what I think? I think it's because Jesus doesn't deal with symptoms. He deals with heart conditions. Jesus doesn't deal with outward symptoms. He deals with the disease itself. I mean, what do you think Jesus would say to you if you're living that life of just partying and just living it up, doing the college thing? What do you think Jesus wants to have a conversation with you about? Does he want to talk to you about how you drink too much and how you have sex too much? Or does he want to talk to you about how it might be possible that you're insecure and you're trying to meet all your needs by having all these sort of pseudo friends that when you get lit up on the weekends, you're all friends and you're all having a good time? And does he want to talk to you about that you have sex too much? Or does he want to talk to you about how you're trying to find your self-worth in this relationship? Does he want to talk to you about spring break? Or does he want to talk to you about how you just might be missing the point of life? So Jesus stands over us, ready to forgive and ready to heal and ready to point us toward the life that's truly life. Now, why did Jesus hate hanging out with self-righteous people? He'd rather be with people at a party. We get a clue to this if we look back at verse 6. I'm just going to read this to you. He says that he came and preached good news to the poor. Sorry, chapter 11, verse 5. He came and preached good news to the poor. See, tonight, this is only good news if you understand that you're the one laying on the ground with the broken arm, right? Because, I mean, if you're just at the skate park and you're laying on the ground and you're like, I'm fine. Thanks, but no thanks. I'll be just fine. Then Jesus is of no use to you. He's of no value to you. And there's a reason why Jesus spent his time with messed up people, with broken people, with poor people. It's because they're the ones that realized, dude, if you don't help me, I'm in a bad way. I need you. And you know, Jesus doesn't want to come and just modify your behavior. Jesus isn't like a lot of the other prophets you read about in religion class. Other prophets who came to make bad men and women good. Jesus did not come to make bad people good. He came to make dead people alive. And Jesus doesn't want to just treat the symptoms of your life and tell you to stop drinking and stop partying. Jesus wants to get into the core of who you are. That place where when you're laying in bed, you wonder who you are and why you're here. And he wants to address that. And so tonight, Jesus the drunk, he's saying clearly to these people, these religious people, you know what? You guys are like little kids playing on the playground. You'll never be happy. God sends John. He's obeying all your laws. He's just doing it just right. And you guys cast him off. He's got a demon. Then I come. I enter into the world. I get my hands dirty. I'm mixing it up with lost people, broken people, and you say, he's a drunk. You guys, he's saying, you'll never be happy. That's what this generation is like. And what I want to ask you is, what is your generation like? What are you like? I want to just close by addressing four different groups of people tonight as we close. And the first group is the skeptic. You know, maybe you came tonight and you're a skeptic. You're someone who you doubt this whole thing. I mean, maybe you've read the Bible, it's just not for you. You've taken religion classes here at Iowa and you understand, man, it's written by a bunch of flawed people. It's full of errors. It's, you know, yada, yada. And so you doubt. You're a skeptic. Maybe you don't believe in God or you don't know if there's a God. Let me put a little rock in your shoe and just ask the question, have you rejected Jesus on the basis of modern presuppositions or bad experiences you've had? Or have you rejected the Jesus that we're talking about tonight? And consider the possibility that friendly divine providence has brought you tonight. That's the first group. The second group I want to address is the seeker. Maybe you're intrigued by this Jesus who they called a drunk. You're intrigued by this man. And so you came tonight and you really want to know more. You really want to learn, is there something in this for me? What I want to say to you is, guess what? We're not going to answer all your questions tonight. In fact, I'm wrapping it up and I just scratched the surface. And even afterwards, we're going to sing a few more songs and whatever, but I'm going to be hanging out at Java Joe's afterwards. And if you just want to hang out and have a conversation, that'd be cool. We're just going to have a conversation, a dialogue about Jesus and who he was. Maybe you have questions and whatever, but maybe that's you. And what I want to say to you is, maybe it's not so much that you're seeking God, but maybe God is seeking you tonight. Let him find you. The third group I'm calling the Christian buttheads. The Christian buttheads here tonight. Anybody have any Christian buttheads? Let me describe you and you'll know. Sorry to patronize you and all that, but if this is you, you're someone who's been raised in the church. Man, you've had Sunday school your whole life. You got all the Bible answers. You're like this girl that we talked to this week, and she's like, I mean, she had all the right answers to all the questions. She knew why they called Jesus a drunk. She absolutely, Jesus' teachings are relevant and he's God. And, you know, clearly she'd been raised in this kind of Bible-centered home. And then we're like, oh man, that's awesome. Are you part of a community of people who are going after God? And she's like, oh no, no, not at all. I don't go to church or whatever. Maybe you're like that. You're like, you have all the answers. And you could have given this talk tonight, but you know what? Your life is no different than anyone else here at the University of Iowa. Like, you are just, you're partying it up. You're living like everyone else. There is nothing, like, the fact that you claim to know Jesus, it makes no difference to you, except maybe what you do on Sunday morning. You think you're healthy, but maybe tonight you need to think about the possibility that you're sick. And maybe you don't know Jesus. Maybe like most Americans, you've been immunized from Jesus. You know, you've gotten just enough of the virus to make you immune to the real thing. Like, you got just enough Sunday school and just enough Bible and all that, that you're immune to the real Jesus. The fourth person I want to, just as we close here, is you are a Christ follower. You're following Jesus. And he has come into the core of who you are. My question to you tonight is, are people attracted to you? Or have you become judgmental and the kind of person that puts people out? The kind of person that definitely, people don't want you to be with them on spring break. They don't like being around you because you're so critical and you're always pointing out what they're doing wrong. Maybe that's you tonight. And maybe you need to understand that they did call Jesus a drunk for a reason. And maybe you need to get your hands dirty. I'm not saying go out and get drunk. I'm just saying maybe you need to understand what it's like to be sick and to be broken and to be able to get in people's worlds and understand. What I want to say to all of us is if we could just meet Jesus tonight, I promise you this, you would love him. You would so love hanging out with Jesus. Unless you're self-righteous and you don't need him. All right. We're gonna close here with a few songs, and this is kind of what we do at Salt Company. And again, if you're a visitor and you came tonight and you're like, okay, that was the talk. All right, I'm ready to get out of here. Then like you're welcome to leave or whatever at any time. But we're gonna sing. If you want to stick around and just kind of listen in on the music and stuff, or and for those of you that are followers of Jesus, this would be a great time to just kind of pray and just kind of respond to God and maybe what he's doing in your heart tonight. And as I said, I'm going to be hanging out at Java Joe's afterwards, and I'd love to continue a conversation with you guys if you're interested. But let me pray for us, and then I'll have the band come on up. Which is kind of the metaphor that I was using earlier about this kid being at the skate park, having this broken arm, but just kind of imagine yourself and where are you at in that? What's your perception of God? What do you think about Jesus? Who is he? And tonight, as we sing, as we kind of respond, I want to remind you again, maybe you already knew this, you just need to be reminded again, that Jesus is like the medic. And he's saying to you, it's going to be all right. I want to heal you. Just let me in. And some of you tonight for the first time are just going to say a prayer, something like, you know, God, I don't know if you're out there, but if you are, I need you to help me. And your first prayer to God is just going to be, God, help. I need you. If you're really a medic who can heal, then I'm saying, yes, I need you. You know, really, all of us are in that place. We need Jesus tonight, all of us. So let's just respond to him here in worship.
My name's Brian. I'm a junior
Can you pause that for a second? I said we were going to close in worship. We're going to have a video. And this is, I forgot about this. Sorry, Brian. This is Brian, and that's his God story. And this is just one of those stories about someone whose life has been changed by Jesus. So pay attention, all right?
Yeah, I've been living in about 10 different cities and different schools and just didn't really have much identity. I don't really know where I would call home.
It was hard. I was just never very close with my parents. My parents took me to church every week, had good parents, but I really didn't own any religious convictions. Most of the cities I moved to, I would have friends that I was put into situations of sexual molestation that just brought about a lot of shame and confusion about who I was and just a lot of things. In middle school, I had moved again, and after the culmination of just moving a ton and a lot of weird experiences I had, depression really kicked in. Through my just depression, I had a lot of suicidal thoughts. Music was a way to counteract against the depression.
I was in a lot of bands in high school. I don't even know if we had names for a lot of them. I know one was Scarlet Soldiers. There's Lobberista, Killer Boots. I played music a lot. Did drugs and played music a lot. In high school, my drug usage got to just kind of abusive levels. I used to just drink so much I would black out. Most of the time, other people would tell me about stuff I would do at parties that I have no knowledge about. I started cutting myself through the depression, just wanting to get an out. And they would just kind of tell me who I was and see me as the party crazy guy. The weird thing was, while this was all going on, I was still going to church and going to youth group. A guy I met there was Sam Moortweet. Sam was a great guy. Sam was the kind of guy that you could just see something different in him. He loved people. He would see that I would come to youth group high, hungover, all these things. Just really wanted to help and get involved in my messy life. One way that I connected with a bunch of the guys in youth group was through music, and one thing, Sam invited me to go watch Five Iron Frenzy's last concert in Colorado. So we were gonna get up and do this big old road trip over to Colorado. So we were driving along, and it was pretty late, and so we decided to play Freeze Out to keep ourselves woken up. So we rolled the windows down, we're taking our shirts off, and the driver asked the passenger to hold the wheel while so he could take his shirt off, you know, to play this game. And that's when the car swerved, and we started rolling. I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, so I flew out of the car and landed in the median. I don't remember much, but just getting up and wiping my eyes away because I couldn't see anything, and I just saw that my hand was covered in blood. I had blood everywhere, and I went into shock at that point. The EMTs got there. They strapped me down. I had broken my arm in three places. They put a neck brace on, rushed me to the hospital, and were sure that something pretty bad had happened to me. So after I woke up in the hospital, I asked another guy that was in the car next to me what had happened. Sam was in the back and got thrown from the car as well and had died instantly. Both me and Sam were thrown from the car, but in contrast, I don't have any remaining marks, no health defects that I know of, really nothing bad. I broke my arm in three places, but I don't even have scars from where I smashed up my head and blood was coming from everywhere. It's really kind of an odd thing. After the accident, I wasn't super emotional about it, but it was such a powerful event that it kind of shook up my small view of life. So I still was just kind of living pretty similarly to what I had before the accident. The accident was in November of my 10th grade, and that April after that was what Sam's birthday, what it would have been. They had a big worship set. Something just clicked that day for me. Something just moved me. I saw the power of grace and of God and of Christ. And I think of all the times up to that point, I can see that as the biggest turnaround. So the next day after the service, the thing I decided to do was I brought my Bible to school. I thought this would be a shock factor. I felt Christ in me. I had become a Christian. There was something different, but there was just kind of an identity crisis of now this power I felt inside of me, these truths I saw, and just who I was at high school.
I started going to another church, and this guy, Thaddeus Seidel, let me know that they needed a bass player, which I love playing bass. And so I got to play in the worship band for my senior year of high school, which was really huge for me because I had always played music for the longest time, but playing music to worship God was a foreign concept to me. I had some ups and downs, you know, it's hard to get away from it, but after the summer of my senior year, I got baptized. At my baptism, I said in front of the whole church that what it was, my life was about drugs, sex, and rock and roll, and my life had just changed to being about worshiping God. Just knowing, I don't know, my past, I felt horrible. I felt like a worthless Christian because just the different sins I struggled with, the different things I struggled with that other people didn't struggle with or didn't seem to really struggle with, and I just felt like I wasn't worthy, I wasn't good enough. 2 Corinthians 12:9, he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So I'll boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so Christ's power may rest on me." After the summer of my senior year, after being baptized, things had changed. I stopped having problems with drugs. I stopped doing drugs. I didn't have any more suicidal thoughts. I wasn't depressed. I had a joy in me. I didn't get drunk. I didn't black out. I remembered the weekends. My life was just different. I know for some people watching this, they won't be able to relate to me. They went through something a lot harder than me, and I felt the exact same way. I would watch these types of things with people saying, "Oh, I did drugs and now I became a Christian," and like, "Oh, you don't know what I've been through." And you know, I've met people that have had less messed up stories and way more messed up stories than me. But it's not really about how messed up we are. It's more about how powerful God is and how real that is. My name's Brian, and this is the story of God's amazing grace in me.